Tapārasya nivṛttita sukham. Pravartamānasya gunāyir anātmanās. Sato bhavān darśaya cestitam vibho. Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Theological science is a difficult subject, especially when it deals with the transcendental nature of God. It is not a subject matter to be understood by persons who are too much attached to material activities. Only the very expert who have almost retired from materialistic activities by culture of spiritual knowledge can be admitted to the study of this great science. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that out of many hundreds and thousands of men, only one person deserves to enter into transcendental realization. Now, out of many thousands of just such transcendentally realized persons, only a few can understand the theological science specifically dealing with God as a person. Sri Vyasadeva is therefore advised by Narada to describe the science of God directly by relating his transcendental activities. Vyasadeva himself is a personality expert in this science, and he is unattached to material enjoyment. Therefore, he is the right person to describe it. And Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is the right person to receive it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost theological science, and therefore it can react on the layman as medicinal doses. Because it contains the transcendental activities of the Lord, there is no difference between the Lord and the literature. The literature is the factual literary incarnation of the Lord. So the layman can hear the narration of the activities of the Lord. Thereby, they are able to associate with the Lord and thus gradually become purified from material diseases. The expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstance. Devotional service is dynamic activity, and the expert devotees can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of the materialistic population. Such transcendental activities of the devotees for the service of the Lord can bring a new order of life to the foolish society of materialistic men. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his subsequent followers exhibited expert dexterity in this connection. By following the same method, one can bring the materialistic men of this age of quarrel into order for peaceful life and transcendental realization. Observes to to understand the knowledge of transcendental values is herein explained. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, as explained in this verse, is Vibhu. He is unlimited, and he is inconceivable by any material means. The material mind, material intelligence, material senses have no access to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Supreme Lord is transcendental to the modes of material nature. The Supreme Lord is absolutely of a transcendental nature. Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So how can the mind, intelligence, and senses that are temporary, full of ignorance and full of misery, even make contact with the Supreme Lord? It is not possible. And of course, within this world, there are many religious processes which are giving information about the personality of Godhead in his various features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. But Krishna explains, Manushanam sahasreshu kashchid yatati shidhaye yatatam apishidhanam kashchid mam veti tattvata. That out of thousands of such people, one even may endeavor for real perfection. And out of those, hardly one know me in truth. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to Srila Rupa Goswami, he began in this way by describing that there are 8,400,000 species of life, and out of those, durlabha manava janma lobhiya samsari, that this human form of life is very rare. After evolving through many, many universes, through millions of species of life, the spirit soul comes to this human form. How rare. Human form of life is meant only for self-realization. But within this human species, most of the population is considered uncivilized. Civilized means we live by scriptural injunctions. Uncivilized means that we live by our own whims or by the whims and speculations of others, whether they be politicians, religious leaders, family members. If they are not strictly based on the evidence of scriptures, especially the original scriptures, the Vedas, we are considered to be uncivilized. Here in Bombay, by human value, this place is a jungle. This is not human society. Dwipashu, two-legged animals. How many are actually living by the scriptural rules and regulations? And due to ignorance, thinking that civilization is most advanced in the West, where there is science and technology and all sorts of advanced forms of communication, we are thinking that that is developed civilization. And when we go to a simple holy place and we see people just drinking the water from the river, bathing in the river, living very simple in a little clay hut, studying the scriptures, just accepting in such a simple and pure heart whatever God provides, people consider this to be uncivilized. They don't have telephone. They don't have television. They don't have automobile. They don't have running water. They don't have electricity. They are not educated in modern universities. They are uncivilized. What to speak? They don't speak English. They must be uncivilized. And here in India, this is becoming the standard of conception. But to be civilized means to understand what are the teachings of the Vedas and to follow them. Within the world today, it is very rare to find people who are actually civilized human beings. And Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu explains, out of such civilized human beings, it is most of them are following the karma kanda sections of the Vedas. They are following scriptural rules and regulations because they want to improve their material existence. It's very rare to find one person out of such civilized persons who really is aspiring to become detached from material conceptions of life and achieve what is beyond. And out of those who have realized the innate frustration of karma kanda, they take to the yoga kanda, astanga kanda, or jnana kanda division of the Vedas. They seek liberation or higher material powers. Out of such souls, it is very, very rare to find one who is genuinely seeking service to the Lord through the path of real bhakti. And of those who follow the real path of bhakti, really struggling and striving for pure devotional service under the guidance of proper spiritual master and proper Vaishnava association, it is very, very rare to find one who is actually surrendered to the Lord wholeheartedly and thus achieves pure devotional service. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Latar. After traveling through many, many Brahmandas, by the mercy of the Lord, one comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master who plants the seed of bhakti. That seed is so rare, so precious, and it must be watered by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, and it must be protected by good association and by following regulative principles. And gradually, under such direction, that seed of bhakti grows. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that ultimately it grows and that seed of bhakti becomes a tree. And it pierces through all the eight coverings of material existence. It penetrates beyond the viraja, that dividing line between material and spiritual existence. And then it enters into the Brahma Jyoti and it continues to grow and bypasses the Vaikuntha planets and ultimately comes to the supreme most Vaikuntha of Goloka Vrindavan. And there it bears fruit and that fruit falls as an offering at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. And Krishna and the devotee himself both eternally taste and enjoy the infinite ambrosial nectar of that fruit of pure love of Krishna, prema bhakti. So Rupa Goswami, through this wonderful instruction that he received from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explains one of the qualities of devotional service is that it is very, very rare. Although it is available for everyone, it is so rare because hardly one really wants to be the eternal servant of the Lord. In this world, even devotees, to some extent, want to be the enjoyers. Enjoyers of the senses, enjoyers of position, and so forth. And also, one has to be willing to be purified according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead's divine will. And that means we have to be very humble. Because when Krishna wants to purify us, either through the instructions of Gurudev, or through the association of the Vaishnavas, or through his various energies, he knows what's best. Sometimes it is very difficult. Krishna puts us through physical conditions, mental conditions. Most of all, the greatest obstacle is the stubbornness that we have cultivated in our own minds for so many births that we have to overcome. But a devotee understands that every situation he's put in or she's put in throughout life is the perfect situation to become purified and become Krishna conscious. Nothing happens by chance. Nothing happens by accident. So therefore, a devotee must welcome every situation and act according to the words of Krishna and Guru without deviation. Devotees should not complain. Devotees should not think that they are being unfairly treated. This is the mentality of a karmi. Tateno kam pam susamikshamano bhunjana evatmikritam vipagam ridbhagva pura vir vidadam namaste jivetiya mukti pate sadaya bhag. A devotee, when he's put into his situation of being misunderstood, or when a devotee is put into a situation of great trial and tribulation, the devotee with folded palms gratefully thanks Krishna that this is very good. I deserve so many millions of times worse. Is a trial and tribulation. Still, someone should teach them that Srimad Bhagavatam is going on. Devotee feels that I deserve much worse. It is the karmi mentality to think I deserve the best. The devotee's realization that I deserve the worst. This is actually what humility is. Humility doesn't mean just bowing down and saying, how can I serve you? That's an external form which is required. But real humility comes when we're tested. And when something comes upon us that is very unpleasant, and we think that, my Lord, I am so sinful, so unrighteous. All the times I have offended you and offended your devotees through so many births, I deserve far worse. But you are just giving me, just a, because I am your devotee, a little sample just to help me understand my deplorable condition so that I can improve myself. That is a devotee's consciousness. But those who do not understand what is Krishna consciousness, they retaliate. They retaliate against whatever particular agent God sends to help them in their spiritual progress. Why? You are a rascal. I am good. I am a very good devotee. You are a rascal. Or, why, God, you're doing this to me. Have you made some mistake? Or have you forgotten me? Or are you not omnipotent, omnipresent, and all-knowing? This cannot be. Humility is to accept and forbear and tolerate whatever comes into our life. We should be willing to fight in great, heroic, fearless enthusiasm for the mission of our Guru Maharaj, for the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and for the rights of other Vaishnavas. But for ourselves, we should be forbearant, like a tree, and humble like the grass, ready to offer all respect to others and none in return. So as we can see, this is very difficult. Ahankara vimudatma. For those who have the false ego, this is very difficult. Most difficult thing. But if we are not willing to pursue, then we are cheating ourselves. We are cheating God. So it is explained here that this material happiness, when we are attached to it, it blocks our capacity to understand what is transcendental knowledge, what is real spiritual values. And only that expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. And Narada Muni is telling Srila Veda Vyasa that you are such a personality, but you have been cheating these people. Because although you know the supreme goal, the ultimate aim, the people who are naturally inclined to enjoy, you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. Therefore, you are the proper person whom could show the transcendental ways of real realization through descriptions of the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God. Because when the Lord appears to perform his pastimes, he performs his pastimes with his pure devotees. And naturally, the subject is exclusively pure devotional service when it is explained properly. As we were explaining the other day, the culmination of all of the pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam is pure devotional service. And therefore, Sri Narada Muni is explaining to Vedavyas that this is the great thirst that is within every soul's heart of hearts. Unless you put as the goal the right thing, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshashtame Ka Purusha Puna. Real renunciation, real knowledge which culminates in pure devotion, then people will be misled to aspire for other things. And they will be content with that. But the path of bhakti is that the expert transcendental teachers who teach on behalf of Srila Veda Vyasa and the Srimad Bhagavatam, they will never let us be satisfied with anything less than pure devotional service. No doubt that we all have our own level of realization and we have to gradually evolve. But we should never be content. We should never think that we've done enough. We should never think that now everything is all right. Until we're 100% cleansed from all material attachments, and until our body, mind, words, and life are exclusively offered in the loving service of the Lord, we should feel grateful and content that we're situated on the right boat, which is taking us across the ocean. But we should never be content with our present spiritual condition of life. We must always be struggling to go further, to become more detached. And in Vedic civilization, advancement in a human being's life is completely opposite than a materialist. Yani sarva bhutanam. Materialistic society means the more you acquire, the more you're successful. But in spiritual life, the more you become materially detached, the more you can understand you're advancing. And therefore, we must have that proper guidance and association that will counteract the influences of the material energy as it is perpetuating the entire world. It's such an intoxicating fever. It is an epidemic. It is a plague. All over the world, they're so worried about a few people that died of the bubonic plague here in India. It's all over international media. Stopping airplanes, stopping boats. This is the testimony that the world is in utter ignorance. If they had any knowledge, this land of India would stop all boats and all planes going to the West, because there is the plague of material illusion and ignorance, which is causing everyone suffering and death. But people are mad to go there, mad to import whatever they could get from the West. Srila Prabhupada told us that when he was young, it was understood by everyone practically in India. It was a brainwashed process that whatever is made in London is first class and whatever is from India is last class. And when you're programmed to think like that in terms of material ideas, then gradually you start thinking the same thing about religion. Anything from this place is last class. But we should know that this world is suffering from a terrible, terrible plague. It's an epidemic, and it's highly contagious. If we associate with materialistic people, we become fallen spiritually, and we suffer and die spiritually. But yet there's no precaution. This material body, it's going to die today or tomorrow. But the purpose of human life, the whole purpose of creation, is self-realization. And if that propensity in our heart is killed, then we've lost everything. If our body dies, we've lost nothing, because we're going to get another one. So just see, because of some bubonic plague, people are wearing masks, gas masks, oxygen masks, putting various surgical devices over their faces, taking inoculations, no public gatherings. Such fear over this material plague of a disease. But yet the real disease, the real plague, which is billions of times more contagious than this one, we don't take any precautions. We don't even recognize that it's killing our very soul's health. The health of the soul is the propensity to serve Radha and Krishna. And this is the problem. That this plague is raging so violently throughout this entire planet, and it makes it so difficult to make any real spiritual progress. Because you have to go against the current of the whole material energy. Your material reputation is at stake if you take to spiritual life. It is a fact. Therefore, devotees understand that the standard of advancement is to the degree we become detached from material enjoyment. And the standard of degradation and perpetuation of the disease is to the degree we become attached to material happiness. And as it is said in the Christian Bible, we should be in this world, but not of this world. We must perform our service for the pleasure of Krishna, not for the pleasure of our own purpose. Amongst the Mayavadis, the teachings of Shankaracharya, it was basically explained that you can't really study the Shastra, nor can you make really any spiritual advancement on that path until you take sannyas. First, take sannyas, then think about spiritual life. Because as long as you're attached to sex life and all of the connections and expansions that are born of that, then Shankar said, forget spiritual life. You're not qualified. It's a joke, it's a farce. But the path of bhakti is so strong, it is so powerful. Why? Because in the impersonalistic paths of realization, it is ascending. It is by our power and our detachment and our ability to discriminate in every situation in life that we make progress. And therefore, as long as we're indulging in material happiness or material relationships, you can make no progress. You cannot ascend. Whatever knowledge you have, you're just being dragged down by your material affiliations. But the path of bhakti is dependent on the grace of Krishna. And therefore, even in the household ashram, one can become perfect on the path of bhakti. If he simply lives with the motivation of serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna and not his own separate personal enjoyment. Grihe thako, vane thako, sada hari bole thako. whether one is householder or sannyasi, on the path of bhakti, it doesn't make that much difference. If we are somehow or other appealing for the mercy of the Lord by our humility and our devotion. In fact, in the impersonalistic paths, Shankara and others have taught that, what to speak of women? Women do not take sannyas. So what is their hope? They have no hope. But in the path of bhakti, we find Queen Kunti, Draupadi, and so many others, Janavi Devi, they were perfect, realized, because with all humility they attracted the infinite grace of Lord Sri Krishna. In fact, the gopis, just by their willingness to please and serve Krishna, they are the topmost of all transcendentalists on the path of bhakti. And in Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu's Leela, we find Adwaita Charja, Nityananda Prabhu, Srivas Pandit. They were grihasthas, but they were not attached to material happiness. They were simply attached to pleasing the devotees, and with all humility, to helping the Lord in his divine mission and chanting the holy names of Krishna. So we must understand our good fortune and what a rare, rare opportunity we have. Srila Prabhupada explains that expert devotees who are teaching people this great path of bhakti, trying to help purify all classes of men from material diseases, they are competent to inject the Lord's mercy into the dull brains of materialistic population. And oftentimes they make dynamic arrangements to somehow or other, according to the time, the place, the circumstance, and the people involved, to get the people's attention. But once getting their attention, through sometimes various divisive methods, one must give them the real medicine. If you take the real medicine and put it in sugar candy to get someone to taste it and take it, then that person will be cured of the disease. But if you change the constitution of the medicine to make it more palatable, then actually you give them nothing. So therefore, the great devotees of the Lord, they sometimes adjust things according to time and circumstance, but never compromise the purity and the sanctity of the essence of what they're giving, which is exactly what all the previous acharyas have given. That mercy must be intact. And therefore, unless we really have that very, very pure vision, as well as the authorization of the great Vaishnavas, both present in this world as well as the great Vaishnavas who have left behind these great teachings, we should not think that we have the authority to change anything. However great we are, we must seek the blessings of the great souls. And if we receive from such a authorized humble servant of Srila Vyasadeva and the disciplic succession, and we really strive to keep unmotivated devotion as the only goal of our life, through hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and reducing our sense gratification as far as possible, then what is so rare, what is so precious, is easily available. And someone asked the other day that you say easily available, but it's so difficult. But compared to what it's worth, however many difficulties you are enduring, is actually nothing. In Satya Yuga, you had to become perfectly celibate, practically give up eating and sleeping for 60,000 years, focusing all your attention on one point, to even begin to get the mercy of the Supreme Lord, in which bhakti awakens in your heart. Who can do that today? We think it's difficult to concentrate on our 16 rounds. We think it's difficult to follow the four regulative principles. But compared to the price of pure devotional service at any other time, the process we have is so simple and so easy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it like that. That's all we have to do. If we're simply willing to follow this process nicely, under such expert guidance, then by the mercy of the Lord, not by our endeavor, but by the mercy of the Lord, we can realize the perfection that is being spoken of in Srimad Bhagavatam. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, you say about this, it's very difficult to come out of our ego, and it's very difficult to maintain the humility. And Krishna just goes on smashing us again and again and again to just to come to the humility level. Mm-hmm. What the problem we face is...
And you should know that the harder you're being smashed, you should think, I must really be puffed up. Krishna has to smash so hard, that means I must have so much ego. So we should beg Krishna, go on, continue on, get it all out. Do the needful.
Krishna plays a trick.
If you're on the operating table and you have some cancerous tumor, do you ask the surgeon, leave a little there? Don't take it all away. Just some of it. Leave some there. But the more he goes to get, the deeper he has to cut you to get more and more and more. Deeper, deeper, deeper. Cutting, cutting, cutting. We should be praying, Krishna, just continue to cut, get every drop out, dig it out, whatever it takes. We shouldn't think, no, Krishna, that's enough. Leave some of this cancerous tumor of my false ego. Leave some of it there. It should all be taken. And the more we have, the deeper Krishna has to cut. So if we're being cut, we should know that this means that I must really be proud.
What Krishna used to play a trick is, he smashes our ego for some time of time, and we are used to it. Okay, now Krishna is smashing my ego, let it go on. But then he gives some relief to us. He gives some sense gratification or something, everything goes very nicely. And then what happens is our mind is completely, we are used to all this relief and everything. And then again he smashes our ego. And once again he starts smashing our ego, it's very difficult to again exist with all sorts of difficulties and problems. So is it not so that we can pray to Krishna, if you want to smash our ego, don't bring some relief in between. By giving relief in between, our mind is again getting adjusted with it, and it's finding it very difficult again to readjust with whatever the difficulty, it starts once again. So is it not that we can pray to Krishna that if you want to smash my ego with a continuous process, but don't give me relief in between. Because again the mind is getting adjusted with it.
Because our egos are so strong and we are so attached to them, if he didn't give relief, we would probably die. We couldn't tolerate for dosage of medicine. But we should know that it's not that we have to be smashed. Every time when I say smashed, it doesn't mean that we have to be insulted. The whole world has to fall apart before our eyes. Everything has to be taken away. That may be what we need. If it is, that's what will happen if you're sincere. But if you're really sincere, every time you hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, your ego should be smashed. You should be longing for humility. You should be longing to be the servant of the servant of the servant. That longing and the chanting of the holy name in that mood is the best medicine to cure the ego. Because after all, materialists are getting smashed left, right, bottom, and top every day. But they're making no progress. And don't think devotees are getting smashed worse than the gross materialists. So it's not simply by being smashed. We have to want it. And ultimately we have to so sincerely chant the holy names and so sincerely try to serve the Vaishnavas. That is what really ultimately takes our ego away. And the difficulties that we endure in our life is meant simply to make us more serious about chanting the holy names and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and serving and associating with devotees properly. This is what cleanses the ego. The material disturbances do not cleanse it. It just causes pain and grief to us. But that pain and grief is meant to cause us to run with an eager and intense heart to the satsanga Vaishnavas, to the words of the Bhagavat, and to the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare.
Maharaj Prabhupada says here that the expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstance. So what is the proper standard for this? How do we understand what Prabhupada actually means when he says about new means or new ways?
We already tried to explain that it doesn't mean you can change the medicine. The medicine must be as it is. But how to attract people to take that medicine? That is according to the expert vision of such an expert devotee. Just like an example, in the temples in South India, they have the deity room is pitch dark. And if you want to see the deities, they have to put some light in front of the deities, some camphor lamp. Most people, when they go to these temples in South India, when they pay donations, it's because they want to see the deity.
Because if you pay a donation, they offer little Archie, and they put the lamp in front of the deity's face, then you can see. Otherwise, it's so dark. By the time you get in there, your eyes have to readjust, to the light outside, and you're usually only allowed to be there for a few seconds before they push you through. So in this way, this is the tradition. But we find in our temples lights all over the deities, all shining, so that people can see them. So this is an adjustment. The tradition is that there's oil lamps and ghee lamps, but we have electrical lamps. But you have to understand that the deity is the same. Deity is not being changed. But the way that people perceive it, according to time, place, and circumstance, according to technology and science, we're revealing the deity. So that's an adjustment that has been made by the great acharyas. Let there be electrical lights, but let Krishna be as he is. And similarly, in the past, we read in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhakta Ratnakar, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at Rameshwaram and he found the Brahma Samhita, he had to have it copied down, word for word, so that he could have a copy of it. And when Srinivas Acharya wanted to study Bhagavat from Gadadhar Pandit, Gadadhar Pandit, due to his tears of ecstatic love, all of the ink of the book was washed away. So Srinivas Acharya had to go all the way back to Bengal from Jagannath Puri to have the scribes, letter by letter, by hand, copy the entire 18,000 slokas of Srimad Bhagavat. This is the tradition, that there are certain trained scribes, pundits, whose job is just to copy the scriptures in very excellent Sanskrit. And they were trained to do it in such a way. Not an ordinary person can do. This is our tradition. But then Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vinod, they decided, the same words, we cannot change a word of it. But let us use the printing presses and print millions, hundreds and thousands, and distribute them profusely. So that's an adjustment, is it not? It's an adjustment from the tradition. But the words are exactly the same. And in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, for example, previously those in the renounced order were generally living as Babaji's, and they only would carry little pot, and they would have just kopan. But Srila Prabhupada understood, on the order of his guru, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted this mission spread throughout the whole world. So he got on airplanes. And he flew on airplanes. But the message was exactly intact. So this is what Srila Prabhupada is explaining. But we can't adulterate, compromise, or mix devotional service with anything else. That is a mistake. We must give the thing as it is. Just like the difference between the scribe writing and the printing press. But if you change the words to put it in the printing press, then you lose the potency. It must be the same words. Anyabilashita sunyam jnana karmanina. We cannot mix Krishna consciousness with any of the religions that are basically based on Arthakama Dhamma Moksha. we have no right to compromise and mix the sadhana or the philosophy in any way. We must give it as it is. But we can use various methods to induce people to take it as it is. If we compromise what we're giving because people don't want the real thing, then we are cheating them. We have to give them the real thing. In this temple, we're using so much technology. Devotees are going on trains, devotees are going on buses. Traditionally, brahmacharis are only supposed to walk. You're not supposed to use any conveyance. So there's an adjustment made. But their life, the principles that they're following and the thing that they're teaching is exactly the same. Yes?
Maharaj said that spiritual pride is worse than material pride. So, but there is also a natural tendency. I mean, it's a very spontaneous thing in our activities. We become proud. So isn't it we are at a greater risk? It's a spiritual pride is worse than material pride. But there's a natural tendency to become proud in this process. We try to glorify our own ego, whatever we are doing. Only thing is sometimes we are aware of it. So isn't it we are at a greater risk because spiritual pride is worse than material pride?
False pride is material. There's no real such spiritual pride means to be proud of Krishna. Spiritual pride means to be proud of the Vaishnavas, to be proud of our Guru. This is spiritual pride. Anything that has to do with our own ego is material pride. But sometimes our material pride identifies with our spiritual accomplishments. But we should know that that pride is material, it's not spiritual. It's material pride that's being nourished and fed by our spiritual accomplishments. But it's material, it's not spiritual. Ahankar is a material element. The quality of the soul in its pure state, there's no ahankar. In material life, where our ahankar find satisfaction in being glorified for our material accomplishments. But when we're in a spiritual society, then that same ahankar finds satisfaction in our so-called spiritual accomplishments. Ahankar is dangerous everywhere, anywhere, in all circumstances. But it's more dangerous in spiritual life because in material life, the ahankar has so many ways to enjoy through the senses, through the mind, through watching television, through listening to music, through intoxications. But in spiritual life, we give up all those things. Sometimes we even become a brahmachari or a sannyasi, and we really have no access to hardly any sense gratification, except maybe some rice and dal. And then, really, the only real material pleasure that we can find is in profit adoration and distinction. That, oh, you have done so nice. I am very advanced. I am very austere. Ah. And we want to enjoy that, the material ego. So it's a sharper cutting edge because there's more attention and less diversions on that type of enjoyment. But we must guard against it because it will be the cause of our downfall if we don't. We know it's there, we know it's a disease, and we have to carefully monitor it. It's very important. I'm proud when you do something wonderful. The pride is already there, ahankar. But that ahankar finds something that it can grab onto and enjoy to the degree we do something wonderful. So we must become very careful to always be in the spirit of a servant of the servant, to always recognize that I'm not very spiritually advanced. I'm not very learned. Because all of these things are decorations on a dead body if our heart is not humble. We can know millions of slokas. We can know thousands and thousands and thousands of pastimes. We can be very, very austere. But they're all decorations on a dead body if our heart is not humble. So we should know that. Krishna doesn't care anything for anything we do if it is not offered with sincere humility and devotion. So we must always remember that. But as I was saying last night, if a devotee wants to avoid pride, it doesn't mean he doesn't do anything. Yesterday, Karna asked that if you preach nicely, you become proud that you're a good preacher. So is it better not to preach until you're so pure that you won't get proud? Yes? But then, if you're not a preacher, you'll be proud of anything you do. If you cook a nice preparation for the deities, you'll think, ah, my preparation is better than yours. If you get up for Mangal Arati, you think, I'm got up for Mangal Arati. If you collect a little money, you think, I've collected so much money. If you clean the floor of the temple nicely, oh, just see how nicely this floor is shining because of me. So what are you going to do? If you have a ahankar or false ego, you can be proud of anything you do, not just preaching. So does that mean you should just sleep all day and not do anything because you're afraid if I do anything, I may get proud of it? So I'll sleep all day. And if you sleep all day, you'll become proud that just see how much I can sleep. Just see. I'm sleeping all day. Therefore, I'm more humble than all these other devotees who are so proud of what they're doing. Whatever you do or whatever you don't do, you'll become proud of. That's your material condition. But what is the way of purifying ourselves from our pride? By working as hard as we possibly can to do as much as we can. If we're a preacher, we should preach as well as we can to as many people as we can. If we're cleaning the floor, we should clean this floor as immaculate as possible. If we're cooking, we should cook the best possible way we can. And how do we free ourselves from pride? By doing it as a service. By doing it in a mood of service, doing it itself frees us of pride. But we have to check and monitor our nature that we want to do it for our own enjoyment. We have to continue to remember, I am doing it as a service. I am doing it as an instrument. Instrument of higher powers. If somebody is a grihastha, and he gives 1 crore of rupees to the temple, he thinks, well, maybe I shouldn't give 1 crore of rupees to the temple because I'll become proud. I'll think that I have given more than everybody else. So I'll keep it for myself. I'll keep it for myself. I'll keep it in the banks just to be humble. That is an illusion. You give it. But you have good sadhana. You chant the holy names very attentively. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. And you carefully hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and you understand that it's not my money. It's not my intelligence. It's not my ability. Whatever it is Krishna. If I give it all to Krishna, that's humility. That will purify us. We have to have good sadhana, good hearing and chanting. We have to always be monitoring the ego and reminding ourselves that the more I do in devotional service in the proper spirit, the more I become purified of pride and all of the other anarthas. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.